Good morning. It is good to see a number of more faces here. Earlier we were wondering if it was the threat of cold weather or the actual freezing weather this morning that kept people away, but we're glad you made it. Before I get started and give you the title of my message, are there any English majors in here, people with English degrees? In that case, the title of my message is More Q, Less A. If there had been any English majors, the title would have been More Q, Fewer A. But with the way the government's going today, I don't like saying fewer. Most conservative and mainline churches don't like to talk about it a lot. But the reality is that churches have done lots of damage to lots of lives for a lot of time. This gathering alone is decorated with folks who have been hurt by the church and are in the process of understanding spirituality with all the baggage that so frequently comes with institutionalized churches. The list of damages is actually quite long, and frankly, that's probably true for most institutions in general. It's sort of hard to gain a large footprint and not manage to step on people as you move forward. It's hard, but it's not really excusable, and there's always room for improvement. Now, I think that one of the more quietly damaging things that the institutionalized church has done over the years is to teach us that asking questions is bad, or at least investigative questions are bad. Feel free to ask the minister what a particular Bible story means, but it's practically blasphemy to ask why it couldn't mean something else. As a matter of fact, the institutionalized church has a long history of telling us not to ask too many questions. And we are to trust in the traditional translations. We are to learn and repeat the confessions even if we don't agree with what we are saying. And doing otherwise is dangerous. Doing otherwise shows a lack of faith. At least they tell us. As a matter of fact, I now try to minimize my use of the word faith. Colloquially, it has become the near equivalent of blind belief. And blind belief, well, that's just churchy language for I want to believe what I want to believe. And me, well, I've got no use for that. That kind of thinking, or should I say lack of thinking, leads to gullibility and a spiritually shallow life. It's got nothing substantial to stand on, and it falls down time and time again when it's put to the challenges of life and what spirituality can look like during rough times. It cannot sustain you, and it certainly cannot grow you spiritually. It just leaves you stuck in the quagmire that someone else created to control you and your perspective. Or as St. Thomas of Aquinas said, clearly, the person who accepts the church as an infallible guide will believe whatever the church teaches. Personally, I prefer the old Chinese proverb that says, he who asks a question is a fool for 5 minutes. He who does not ask a question remains a fool forever. We should want to ask questions, to grow our faith. To me, we should be innovative in our thinking rather than traditional in it. That is not to say we should ignore traditional thinking. Frequently, it's an excellent place to start. But we should not get stuck in a space and a place that used antiquated thinking, information, and tools to arrive at its conclusions. To grow, we must be innovative. To be innovative, we must ask questions. That's what helps us develop and advance our spirituality. it's interesting to consider that one, that the one group who probably shares this willingness to question everything that the world's leading innovators have is children. They both learn through asking questions. It's the simplest and most effective way of learning, as a matter of fact. Author Warren Berger, in his book, A More Beautiful Question, says that children from the ages of 2 to 5 ask roughly 40,000 questions. Probably a low estimate. And as we go through schooling and into adulthood, the number of questions we ask drop significantly. It would seem that as we get older, we somehow forget this oh-so-important lesson of asking questions. And sometimes, sadly, it's even taught out of us. From standard school curriculum to the blind faith of institutionalized churches, we are typically encouraged to memorize and regurgitate someone else's knowledge rather than to develop our own. We learn answers rather than how to ask good questions. Interestingly, nowadays it's very easy to find answers. Nowadays, answers are practically a dime a dozen. With the use of computers and smartphones, we can find almost every answer to any question with little to no knowledge on that subject. It makes critical thinking and the ability to pose meaningful questions more important than ever before. Knowing how to ask the right question is more important than knowing the answers. It gives us the ability to form our own beliefs and opinions and even problem-solving skills instead of unthinkingly inheriting them from others. And here's the thing. Not asking good or even enough questions has a direct impact on the quality of choices that you make. And not making good choices in our spiritual lives is not just unfortunate. It can impact the health with which we move through life. Learning and practicing the art of asking questions helps us gain deep insight, develop more innovative solutions, and arrive at better decision-making. Spirituality attempts to help us understand who we are and what we are to be within this grand experiment that we call life. It attempts to lead us into being our best selves, to guide us into making the most positive impact we can in every moment of our lives, to play the best role we can in making others' lives better and creation better, to recognize our universal connectedness, to capture glimpses of this thing that we call God. I don't know about you, but while that sounds kind of beautiful, if I stop to think about it for a moment, it can seem pretty overwhelming. I mean, that's a massive, massive undertaking. There is simply no way I can do that with what I now know. Which is why asking questions is so important. The brilliant thinkers of the world will tell you that much more frequently than starting with the known answers, it is asking the right questions, and frequently they are the simple questions, that almost always starts the process which leads to great breakthroughs. Part of the problem is that we live in a culture that values certainty. At various points in our lives, lots of us are encouraged to not only declare with complete certainty our life purpose, but to then create a plan for the coming years with goals and measurable benchmarks. When we find ourselves at points of transition in our lives, we are frequently asked, what's next? And we are not only expected to provide a clear answer, but we frequently expect to be able to give a clear answer. The thing is, if we want real breakthroughs in our lives, professional or spiritually, we must embrace some uncertainty for creative answers to emerge. I mean, isn't your life the most creative process you've ever experienced? What if discovering and living out your purpose, is less about defining it and more about letting it slowly gestate until it is ready to emerge? It seems to me that the most natural creative processes, well, they work that way. We are asked to create the space, the container, and allow the mystery of the muse to work its magic. One of my favorite modern scientists is a theoretical physicist and co-founder of the string theory. His name is Michio Kaku. He says, I have concluded that we are in a world made by rules created by an intelligence. To me, he says, it is clear that we exist in a plan which is governed by rules that were created, shaped by a universal intelligence and not by chance. He also says that in his own point of view, you can neither prove nor disprove the existence of God. That's why I consider myself an agnostic Christian. It's also why I assert that when it comes to spirituality, expecting to have all the answers, rather than learning to constantly ask and live in the questions, is far worse than just folly. It is the height of egoism and self-importance. One of the challenges of the modern church is the reality that the roots of most religion, the roots of most religions are in providing answers. For example, we have creation stories because people in that pre-scientific age wanted to know where we came from, so religion provided the answers. In our scientific age, we have to begin looking at the other truths that these sacred texts provide and be willing to ask questions about them. Not only that, we must begin considering the importance of a paradigm shift away from answers rooted in the past towards questions rooted not only in the present but in the future. Being rooted in questions acknowledges our ultimate inability to prove God. It opens us up to the blossoms of creative spiritual insight and innovation. It frees us from the oppressive need to be right and opens us to the experience of just being. And not only that, but in knowing that we do not have all of the answers, it also should open us to the possibility that others may have perspectives that could help us, whether they come from a different belief tradition or no belief tradition at all. It will open us to dialogues we may have otherwise avoided. Dialogues that may grow us in ways we never could have dreamed of. It might open us to the reality that no one way of growing is the right way of growing. That we're all growing in the same garden, in the same soil, nourished by the same earth. I'll conclude with something Austrian poet and novelist Rainer Maria Rilke once said. Be patient towards everything that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves. Like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue, do not now seek the answers which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. This is your opportunity to share with your spiritual community any thoughts that today's message brought up or additions you'd like to make. Are there those who would like to share?
Thank you, Mark. I would say that your discussion raises more questions than gives answers, but I won't say that. I'm reminded of three things. One of them is the institution that I have just recently retired from, institution of higher education, wanted the students to declare their majors before they got to campus, which I always thought was totally absurd. But it's clearly, this is an example of the institution wanting to be certain about things and to have heck with the students. I mean, in other words, so that's
right.
An example of an institution structuring things in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
In my undergraduate institution, you took general purpose courses, and then in your junior year,
exactly.
You declared a major, which made
a lot of sense.
A lot of sense.
Yeah.
Before that, you didn't know.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing you talked about, answers, it seems to me one of the implicit marks of being an adult is that you know the answers. You're expected to know the answers. Yeah. I think you can even find older children who will say, no, you know, mommy, you know, said that, and you should know that. You shouldn't, you know, you don't write with crayons on the wall.
Right.
Because.
Exactly.
So that may be part of the issue with not asking questions is that if you ask a question, that means that you really aren't one of us.
It's taught out of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the third one was related to one of your early comments, and this is just an observation, that every organization has secrets, and the bigger the organization, the bigger the secrets.
Clear enough.
No.
Well, you may not be willing to say it raised more questions than answers, but I will say as I was writing it, the irony was not lost on me that I was trying to give answers to why we should ask more questions and give fewer answers.
Hello. Good morning. I'm Susan. Your talk sparked a few memories, and the first one is when I was probably a freshman in college, and I had been brought up in a very strong Presbyterian home and Presbyterian church, and I went off to college in a very southern Virginia town, and also sought out the church there. So I went to the Presbyterian church, and the people were wonderful and warm and welcoming until I started asking questions. And then immediately I understood that I wasn't really quite so welcome there if I had questions.
It's sad, but yeah.
So that was when I was about 18 or 19, I don't know. And then the second thing, memory that you jogged, doesn't go so far back, just goes so far back as yesterday. And a friend of mine, a young woman who has a 3-year-old son, posted her conversation, part of a conversation with her 3-year-old. She said, "Come on now, it's time to eat lunch." And the little boy said, "Why, Mama? Why, Mama? Why, Mama? Why?" And she said, well, I've made a sandwich for you. Is it a big one? No, she says, it's just a medium size. No, I want a big one. And she says, well, come and sit down. Why, Mama? Why, Mama? Why, Mama? Why? That's all.
Others.
And on that, I would like to ask Mama, why is bread square and meat round?
I've always wondered why we get round pizzas in square boxes and eat them in triangles. That make a lot of sense.
Well, I thought I had something to say, but this has gotten way over my head. I think that's probably why that I am almost addicted to the program Jeopardy. Mm. And Jeopardy gives you the answers, and you have to figure out what the question is.
I like it. Great point.